This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our update on Pope Francis's health and other stories. That will be followed by Panorama, and then our features, Echo of the African Synod and the Millennium Appointment. I am John Baptist Tumusime. The Holy See released on Monday afternoon an update on Pope Francis's health. The Pope was admitted to Gemelli Catholic Hospital in Rome on Friday for bronchitis. In the statement, the press office said that the medical tests carried out by experts at the hospital indicate that the Holy Father requires adequate time for treatment. He will therefore remain in the hospital until further notice. For that reason, this week his midweek general audience has been cancelled. The Pope is in good spirits but tired. The faithful have been invited to pray for his quick recovery. The Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolini presided over Holy Mass at Our Lady of Yagma in Burkina Faso on Sunday on the occasion of closing the celebrations of the 125th anniversary of the evangelization of the country. The liturgy was attended by thousands of the faithful, who included bishops, lay people, priests, and men and women religious. In his homily, Cardinal Parolini delivered a message of gratitude from Pope Francis to Burkina Faso, who asked the faithful to put their faith in God. The cardinal recalled the missionaries who evangelized the country, noting that their work has produced fruits. He invited the faithful to continue that work by promoting love, coexistence, dialogue, and peace. The cardinal will conclude his visit on Tuesday. He has held meetings with religious, political, and traditional leaders of the country. The Catholic Charity Aid to the Church in Need has announced that it would launch a new campaign calling for solidarity with persecuted Christians around the world at the beginning of this year's Lenten season. This year's Lenten season begins on March 5th. The theme of the campaign will be Martyrs of Our Days, Witnesses of Hope. It is inspired by the theme of the ongoing Holy Year, which is Pilgrims of Hope, and its purpose is to highlight the fact that despite the persecution they suffer, today's martyrs continue to be examples of consolation, faith, and hope. Christians are persecuted in many countries around the world, including in Pakistan, India, Syria, Mali, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, and Mozambique. Aid to the Church in Need is calling upon Christians and the people of goodwill to take part in the campaign to support our persecuted brothers and sisters and to keep the light of hope alive for them by contributing something for their food, clothing, medicine, and shelter. Thousands of Catholics from Kampala Catholic Ecclesiastical Province in Uganda made a pilgrimage to Chigungu Pilgrimage Site on Monday, February 17th, to celebrate the 146th anniversary of the arrival of the Catholic faith in the country. The first Catholic missionaries who belonged to the Society of the White Fathers, today known as Missionaries of Africa, landed at Chigungu on the shores of Lake Victoria on 17th February 1879. They were Father Simeon Rudel, commonly known in Uganda as Mapera, and Brother Delmas Amans. They were both French nationals. In addition to the lay faithful present also at Chigungu pilgrimage site on Monday, where the bishops of Kasana, Luwero, Lugazi, Masaka, Kindamitiana, and Kampala whose diocese is former Kampala Ecclesiastical Province, as well as priests and men and women religious. The main celebrant at the occasion was the Bishop of Masaka Diocese, the Right Reverend Severus Jumba. In his homily, Bishop Jumba invited the faithful to love one another in imitation of the first missionaries who left their countries to come to Uganda out of love of a people they did not know and they had never met. He also invited them to continue the work of evangelization through examples, first in their own families and in society at large. The Congregation of the Holy Cross has announced that it will be launching a year of mission on April 28th this year in honor of their founder, Blessed Basil Moryu. On that date, it will be 185 years since Blessed Moryu sent the first Holy Cross missionaries to Algiers in 1840. The year of mission will be guided by the theme, Hope Beyond Borders. A statement issued by the congregation said that a significant milestone in the year of mission will be the launch of the Holy Family Mission in the region of Bougainville in Papua New Guinea, where 8 of their members will arrive in March this year to begin missionary work. The year of mission will also be an occasion for the members of the congregation to reflect on the mission entrusted to them by their founder, in light of the urgent needs facing the church and the world, and an occasion for them to renew their missionary spirit and discover fresh ways to embody their roles as educators in the faith with a focus on the marginalized. Currently, Holy Cross missionaries are serving in 16 countries in 5 continents. In Africa, they are serving in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and Ghana. You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The United Nations said on Monday it is seeking $6 billion United States dollars for Sudan this year from international donors. It said that the money is intended to help ease suffering in what it called one of the most devastating crises of our times, characterized by mass displacement and growing famine. Analysts say that the plea comes at a time when aid budgets around the world are under increasing strain, partly due to a pause in funding announced by United States President Donald Trump last month that has affected life-saving programs across the globe. But the United Nations says the funds are necessary because the impact of the 22-month war between Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces looks set to worsen. Detained Ugandan opposition politician Kizza Besigye, who went on a hunger strike last week, has been rushed to hospital after his health deteriorated. A long-time political opponent and critic of President Yoweri Museveni, Besigye's prosecution by a military court and near 3-month incarceration has stoked public anger against the government. Calls for his release have mounted, with pop star-turned politician Bobi Wine, who challenged Museveni for the presidency in the last election in 2021, warning that Besigye appeared close to death early on Monday when he visited him in prison, following his brief hospitalization on Sunday. Besigye's lawyers say he was kidnapped while visiting neighboring Kenya in November and forcibly transported back to Uganda, where he was charged in a military court with various offenses, including illegal weapons possession. Rwandan-backed M23 rebels on Sunday captured Bukavu, the second largest city in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. It is the second city after Goma to fall to the rebels in the mineral-rich region in the past few weeks. The United Nations and European countries have warned that the latest offensive, which has seen hundreds of thousands of people forced from their homes, could spark a wider regional war. More than 40 people, mostly women, were killed after an illegal gold mine collapsed in Mali on Saturday. The collapse took place near Kenieba in Mali's western gold-rich Kayes region. Reuters reported that the victims had climbed into open-pit areas left by industrial miners to look for scraps of gold when the earth around them caved in. This is Mali's second deadly mining accident in 3 weeks, after at least 10 people were killed when a mining tunnel flooded late in January. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. A land reform law recently passed in South Africa has reignited racial tensions in the country. The law, known as the Expropriation Act 2024, requires that the government can only use land expropriation powers for a public purpose or in the public interest. It also requires that such expropriations are subject to compensation as either agreed upon or approved by a court of law. Earlier this month, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order cutting financial assistance to South Africa, citing the Land Act and Pretoria's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice. The government has defended the land reform law as an attempt to rectify the injustices of the past and has pushed back against what it says is misinformation, pointing out that no expropriations have yet taken place under the new law. White farmers own 3/4, or around 70% of South Africa's privately held land, while white people make up only 8% of the population. The new act repeals a 1975 apartheid-era law by the same name. Father Stan Muyebe, the director of the Justice and Peace Commission of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference, spoke about the Land Reform Act in an interview with our colleague Sheila Pirish. The member of the Order of the Preachers or Dominican Fathers began by giving the historical context of the land issue in South Africa before explaining some of the provisions of the new law.
As you may know, South Africa is trying to recover from its painful past of apartheid. One of the painful history for a lot of people was the confiscation of land from communities without compensation during the apartheid. And from 1994, the government took a stand to come up with different programs through which it can try to reverse the harm that was done during apartheid around land issues. It's a very difficult and very sensitive issue for a lot of people. And I think there's a need for reconciliation, racial reconciliation, and part of racial reconciliation in South Africa has to focus on this issue of land. It's very unfortunate that this sensitive matter now has been hijacked by the breakdown in relationship between the United States and South Africa. And there's possibility that there'll be greater tension in the country because it has been taken up in this platform. Hearing what has been presented by the United States, but also in the media, there are some aspects that are facts, but also there's also a manufacturing of facts, misrepresentation. The South African constitution, South Africa is a constitutional democracy, so it is guided by the constitution. And the section 25 of the constitution, it offers protection in 2 senses. Protection to ensure that the seizure, the practice of land seizure, which happened during apartheid, should never happen again, but at the same time also protection in the sense that there should be a redress for those communities that suffered harm during the apartheid. But in trying to assure this redress, to give effect to this redress, the constitution makes sure that it's not done in an arbitrary way. It's not done in such a manner that it becomes a threat to food security, to agriculture system. There are checks and balances that are put in place, both in terms of the constitution, but also in terms of other provisions that have been made in the legislation. The constitution makes provision for the land to have land redress to the communities, but it has to be done through a court process. And the constitution makes provision, section 25, that there should be compensation in that regard. 30 years from the constitution, which was in 1994, I think there's been a lot of conversation. Some people being frustrated by the pace at which the land reform program has taken. And there was pressure from some of the political parties to do a constitutional review. And I think from that process and that pressure, a compromise politically was to have what we now call this registration that is a bone of contention between the United States and South Africa. But when you look at this legislation, this bill, there are some things that we need to also take note. First of all, it's not yet operational. It's not yet being implemented. They're still waiting for the president to indicate the date by which it can come into effect. And given the controversy that is there now, it may take time, the president to come up with such a date. Secondly, we are in a constitutional democracy, so citizens have the right to take a registration to the Constitutional Court so that Constitutional Court can rule on its constitutionality. And I think that process, a lot of people, maybe some people, will take the matter to the Constitutional Court so that the Constitutional Court makes a ruling on its constitutionality. Third, the bill as it is, it makes provision for checks and balances in the sense that the land cannot be confiscated arbitrarily. Property cannot be confiscated arbitrarily. The court has to be involved in that process. And lastly, there are also categories of land that fall under this provision. It's not all the land or all the property. But I think this is a process that has to be resolved internally by South Africans, and not to have external forces interfering in the process. I think the country, it's a country that a lot of issues are resolved through dialogue. A lot of issues are resolved through dialogue. So we should be open to a scenario where in the near future there'll be more dialogue on how to resolve this matter internally. So, for example, very soon there'll be a process of what we call a national dialogue, and we're sure that more likely food, this matter will be an item on the agenda, so that as a country, there's a dialogue on this matter and how to find solution together around this matter.
That was the director of the Justice and Peace Commission of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, Father Stan Muyebe. And that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
Mm-hmm.
And now, our feature, Millennium Appointment. The International Humanitarian Agency of the Catholic Church, Caritas Internationalis, has expressed concern over the decision of the new government of the United States of America to suspend foreign aid, calling it a ruthless and cruel decision that threatens the lives and dignity of millions of people around the world, especially in poor countries. 2 weeks ago, U.S. President Donald Trump froze all foreign aid coordinated by the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. Alistair Dutton is the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis. He explains the relationship Caritas Internationalis has had with USAID.
The quality of USAID for many, many years has been exemplary, and we have worked very closely with them and many other national governments. But USAID has often been one of the leaders in the humanitarian field in terms of quality. In terms of quantity, every country has a target as a percentage of its gross national product. Simply because America is the largest economy, the amount of aid in absolute terms that they give is absolutely huge. In fact, as a percentage of the total economy, America is quite a bit lower than several other countries, including many European countries. Our members have been able to access that funding either directly from USAID missions in their country or as partners of other Caritas organisations. As long as that aid has been there, it has allowed the very best of humanitarian assistance to happen.
USAID has been a vital partner of Caritas supporting vulnerable communities worldwide by providing life-saving assistance for people affected by crisis, delivering basic health care and education, improving access to clean water, sanitation, shelter and protection, and addressing the root causes of poverty. The suspension of that aid, according to Caritas Internationalis, is already having serious effects.
As soon as the announcement was made and people were told to freeze their USAID grants, there is complete uncertainty in all the different parts of the humanitarian system about what they can continue and what they can't continue. We have food in warehouses, but we're unable to transport it to where it is meant to be going. We have ships which are arriving in ports, but we can't pay for them to be unloaded. And we don't know whether we can pay for the warehouses where the food would have been stored or for the trucks to transport them. And in health programs, I saw one program where just in about 9 or 10 countries here in West Africa, about 6 million people will not receive medicine as a result of the health programs being stopped. In Sudan today, we have 750,000 people who are in famine. If they don't receive food aid, they will start to die in large numbers. And we have famine in the other parts of the world, not to mention people who are not yet in famine, but are very, very, very hungry and malnourished.
Mr. Dutton told Vatican Radio that every donor has a right to review the aid he or she gives, but this must be done without abruptly disrupting the delivery of the ongoing services, because it might harm human lives.
Because what was announced when the review was announced was that all the USAID funding in the meantime, all the programs for the next 90 days should stop immediately. That has meant that the harm has been immediate around the world. Of course, you should do a review if you come into a new role. You need to understand what's happening and how you can make it better. But you don't stop things in the meantime. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, coming out of the review should take into account the responsibilities and the commitments that the US has to caring for its neighbours around the world. I believe they do have a responsibility to maintain their aid, to help the poorest in the world. But if they need to do it a different way, if they think they can improve how well they do it, how to provide better aid, how to provide it more effectively or efficiently, then of course we want to learn those lessons. But I don't think they should have stopped it immediately, as they did so abruptly, which has caused chaos.
Alistair Dutton, the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, speaking there to Vatican Radio last week. And that was Millennium Appointment for this week. You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Justice and Peace. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.